This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 24th of February, 2023. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle, from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by readers Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Paul Newman.
Hello.
And this week we welcome a guest reader from the Hampshire Chronicle team, Adele Bouchard.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recorder you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. £3 million in payouts for the latest water mess. Council confirms Mayor's resignation, and Chronicle is home for Talking Newspaper. And the first headline story. Nick, please.
Yes, £3 million in payouts for latest water mess. Thousands of Hampshire people are in line for compensation totalling £3 million after a second breakdown in water supply in under 2 months. Some 15,000 households were affected, with thousands remaining off supply for days in an area stretching from Winchester to Romsey and Southampton. The supply was first cut off on Wednesday, February the 15th, and the last households were only reconnected on Sunday the 19th. Thousands of people will be receiving at least £120 for the inconvenience of being without water for 2 days. Southern Water Chief Executive Lawrence Gosden was called to Parliament on Tuesday, February the 21st, to brief MPs. He said the firm has earmarked £3 million to pay compensation costs to customers. Speaking outside Parliament, Mr. Gosden said, "To recognise the fact that this has been the second outage, we will be offering double the normal compensation, which takes the overall compensation package to about £3 million. So we are hoping that will go some way to recognising the apology we have given to every one of our customers." The MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Steve Brine, said it was important that residents' and businesses' anger was recognised. He said, "I think what we can do is make sure that our constituents' anger is conveyed to them. We've certainly done that today, and we will be following this through." Approximately 15,000 homes were affected by either low water pressure or water outages in this latest failure. The problem was caused by a failure at the company's Otterbourne Works, with the firm saying that around 23,000 properties were initially affected before supplies were rezoned to bring the number down to 15,000. A Southern Water spokesperson explained the issue, saying, "During planned maintenance at our Otterbourne water supply works, our systems detected that untreated water was not being filtered correctly. Our systems are designed to automatically shut down to avoid any risk to our water supplies should this situation arise. Work has been underway since February the 15th to safely contain, drain, clean, disinfect and refill the part of the system affected. Once the system is refilled, we will undertake extensive water quality testing before putting water back into supply. We would never take risks on the quality of the water that we provide, and it's important that we carry out this process in the correct way. This is why it's taking time." The firm later clarified that no unfiltered water entered customer supply due to the water supply and wastewater treatment works operating on separate networks. Southern Water has said that it will be offering compensation to those who were affected by the water supply failure, with customers having £30 accredited to their account for every 12 hours their supply was cut off for. According to the firm's compensation policy, no payment will be made if the outage lasted less than 12 hours. Customers eligible for compensation will be written to directly. However, Southern Water says it may be difficult to identify all properties affected. Those who were affected but not contacted are asked to make a claim, either orally or in writing, within 3 months of the date of their supply was cut off. Meanwhile, those who experienced significantly low water pressure for more than 1 hour on two separate occasions within a 28-day period will receive £25.
Council confirms Mayor's resignation. The Mayor of Winchester, Derek Green, has resigned from the post. Councillor Green had been on a period of leave and not fulfilled any mayoral duties since the autumn. His resignation was revealed last Thursday after the Chronicle had gone to press, with the publication of the agenda and papers for the next council meeting. The reason for his prolonged absence is unclear, and the City Council has declined to clarify. The council will have to elect a replacement to serve for the remainder of the mayoral year, which ends in May. In his absence, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Angela Clear, had often been standing in. Former Mayor Dominic Hiscock represented him at the Mayor's Quiz at Winchester Rugby Club earlier this month. The council agenda said, "Following an extended period of personal leave, Councillor Derek Green has decided to resign from the office of Mayor of Winchester. Council is therefore invited to elect a Mayor of Winchester for the remainder of the current municipal year, 2022 to 2023. The City Council and Council Leader Martin Todd had declined to comment about the issue. There had been increasing concern about the Mayor's absence. A council spokeswoman did say that Councillor Green was not the subject of an inquiry conducted by the Standards Committee, which met in private on January 27th. Councillor Green has not responded to Chronicle approaches for comment. He has represented the St Luke's ward, mainly covering Stanmore, since 2012. He was first elected as a Conservative but switched to the Liberal Democrats. He has also been the long-standing chairman of the Winchester branch of the Royal British Legion. A friend, who asked not to be named, said, "The City Council should have put a statement out about what has caused the mayor to disappear. They have tried to sweep it under the carpet." The last meeting that Councillor Green attended was a full council on October 5th. A replacement will be elected at the full council meeting this evening to be held at the Hampshire County Council Chamber on Castle Avenue.
Chronicle Home for Your Talking Newspaper. Winchester Talking Newspaper has a new home. The service provides, as you know, weekly audio recordings of extracts from the Chronicle, as well as a monthly magazine. John Richards, chairman of Winchester Talking Newspaper, says that the charity has settled in well, and here we are, in the Hampshire Chronicle's offices at 5 Upper Brook Street. He added, "We were delighted when Kimberly Barber, editor, asked if we would like to move in. We were up and running in 2 or 3 days, and in fact, we haven't missed one recording or copying day yet." The charity relies on volunteers and donations to continue to operate, and was searching for a new home, having previously been based in Winnell. John said, "The room we occupy is ideal. It's spacious, light, airy and comfortable. It's exciting to know that the articles we record upstairs have been written downstairs. The two organisations are a perfect match." The Hampshire Chronicle's newest recruit, digital reporter Matt Rooks-Taylor, had the opportunity to join WTN for a recording session on February the 17th. Matt said, "Coming from a broadcast to multimedia journalism background, it was an exciting opportunity to get back into it and help to contribute to such a good cause. The Talking Newspaper provides local news for unsighted and partially sighted people in the city who would otherwise only have reasonable access to more national and regional stories on the TV and radio. The recordings are available free of charge to any blind or partially sighted person with free postage to send them back. The service also provides a device to play the recordings free of charge. To find out more about the organisation, visit its website at winchestertalkingnews.com. And there's a photograph of three people seated at the table and somebody standing. And the image, the photograph, is taken by Adele Bouchard, who is one of our readers this morning.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Nick will follow with Christian comment. Andrews, Caroline Susan, passed away on the 2nd of February 2023, aged 72. Bentley, Peter Michael Galloway, passed away peacefully on Saturday the 11th of February 2023 in Grappenhall, Cheshire, aged 92. Howam, Stanley, passed away peacefully at home on the 14th of February 2023. Jerry, Sally, née Butler, sadly passed away unexpectedly on the 5th of February 2023 at the age of 81. Kemp, Elizabeth Emma, known as Bet, died peacefully in Basingstoke Hospital on the 6th of February 2023, aged 98 years. Parkhurst, David Alfred, passed away peacefully on Friday the 3rd of February, aged 86 years. Christian comment has been written by the Reverend Philip Crinks this week. The title is Remember to Dust You Shall Return. Thank you, Nick.
The beginning of Lent takes us back to the beginning, the ancient story of how the Lord God formed humankind from the dust of the earth. The divine plan sees human life emerge from earth's potential fruitfulness. Since we had to leave Eden, by the sweat of our faces we eat bread while we live. Then each of us returns to the earth again, out of which we have been brought by God. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. To accept that our life comes from and returns to the dusty earth keeps us humble. We do not create ourselves out of nothing. Rather, we exist because of the potential of the world, which only God's creative power can hold in being. The story is told of a scientist who thought her skills were quite something. In fact, she could even compete with God. "Which of us do you think can make the better human being?" she asked. God said, "Game on," and he waited. The scientist, after gathering her thoughts, bent down and began to stretch out her arm towards the ground to pick up some dust to make her human being. But God interrupted. "No, no," he said. "You go find your own dust." If the very dust of the earth belongs to God, that should keep us attentive to the whole of creation. One truth which Genesis teaches is that, were there only dust, God could create from it. But that does not mean he wants us to turn the earth to dust and ashes. Far from it. His command is to attend to the earth so that we may till it. We are to use the gifts of creation to make a sustainable life for ourselves and for future generations. If we generate quantities of waste and pump out damaging gases, we pollute the very earth from which we have come and to which our bodies will return. A cycle of increasingly toxic dust is not God's plan. And the words said on Ash Wednesday go far beyond any cycle of dust. "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Turn away from sin and be faithful to Christ." Being faithful, will that help? Will living in the light of faith really make any difference? Isn't it more like the old joke attributed to Woody Allen about the earlier account of creation in Genesis? "In the beginning there was nothing. The Lord said, 'Let there be light.' Then there was still nothing. But you could see it much better." A good joke and thought-provoking. Perhaps seeing spiritually much better in the light of faith in God is actually rather important. At least it's important when it comes to seeing what is in our own hearts. Is there something good? Or is there nothing? Or is there something we would rather not be there? That is how we start to turn our hearts, which is the way of Lent. In the end, it is the only way to salvation and to a life which participates in God's plan to redeem his creation. This is how our journey from dust to dust can be a pilgrimage of love for God and for our neighbours.
Thank you, Nick. Now, we've got 9 letters to the editor this week, so, back to you, Nick, to start us off with a perfect storm, please.
Southern Water's woes continue to plague customers in Winchester and surrounding areas, as those affected by the troubles at the Otterbourne Water Treatment Plant know all too well. With profits hit by legacy fines and ongoing issues which they struggle to control, like the recent storm discharges at Banbridge, what chance Southern Water will meet future obligations to invest and stop discharges to Hampshire's treasured rivers and coastline? Winchester's MP assures us that all will be well in the best of all worlds, thanks to the toothless new Environment Act. Yet the government's retained EU law revocation and reform bill, which is moving rapidly through Parliament, puts vital regulations that set the standards for rivers and coastal waters at risk of being repealed at the end of 2023. Thanks to members of the House of Lords who are reviewing this reckless legislation, amendments have been tabled to exclude the Bathing Water Regulations and Water Framework Directive from this bill, and so prevent it, by default, becoming a sewage dumpers charter. Time is short. We need to impress upon our local MPs and members of the Lords that strong regulation and well-funded enforcement are the best tools to protect and improve Hampshire's beautiful rivers and coastline by backing these essential amendments. The Environment Act alone does not protect us. And that letter's from Anne Weir, Woodstock Court, Winchester.
So more from Southern Water now. This letter is titled Safe Water. If Southern Water recycles wastewater, then our bills should be reduced to allow us to purchase drinkable bottled water. Desalination plants should be installed to ensure water is safe from any medication and illnesses that could cause contamination. Words are taken as said and are not proven action to remove all contaminants. And that was from G.N. Barrett of Nicholson Place, Alresford.
Member of Parliament's pay rise. First, it was directors claiming golden farewell payments when their companies failed. Now it seems that MPs who are defeated in an election want to cash in as well. The Commons Administration Committee, chaired by Conservative Sir Charles Walker, is proposing that members of Parliament should receive up to £162,000 after losing an election. This is based on 1 month's pay per year of service being touted as a possibility. Compare this with a statutory redundancy payment of only 1 week per year of service for those who tragically lose their jobs through no fault of their own. Is this a grotesque reward for failure, and yet another example of one rule for those in power and another for the rest of us? Stephen Percy, Easton.
Janet Bird writes on the Open Road. I see from an article in the Chronicle of February the 9th that Garnier Road is to be closed for a period of 9 months. In addition, a large part of St James Lane is to be closed for some considerable time. The combination of these closures is likely to generate long traffic queues on both St Cross Road and Romsey Road, and a good deal of traffic misery and pollution. I write to suggest that the through road, Simon Street, the Square, Market Street, is reopened for the duration of these roadworks. And that's from Janet Budd, Edgar Road, Winchester.
Non-disclosure. What surprise findings there are on the internet. It's already a surprise that the judge assessing whether or not Winchester City Council is proceeding legally over River Park should say that the proposed 150-year lease to the University of Southampton does not constitute a disposal, when the council's own public papers call it a virtual freehold. But in looking at other legal stuff online, I find the website of Lie Detector Test UK Services specifically linked to our own city council. The article is headed Winchester Polygraph Test Used for Council Members. This is because, in its desire to avoid openness and transparency, Winchester City Council had been demanding that members should sign non-disclosure agreements, NDAs. That is the same legal mechanism used by Harvey Weinstein for his young women employees and by Sir Philip Green against his employees, the asset-stripping owner of BHS and more, who was finally stripped of his knighthood for misbehaviour. It's not clear who imposed the NDAs in Winchester. Presumably the chief executive and leadership. Councillors were obliged to sign before being shown information, for example on Central Winchester Regeneration or the Station Approach area. but members objected, calling it heavy-handed and totally unnecessary. And so, just over a year ago, according to this useful trade body, the council proposed polygraph, or lie detector, test instead. I don't know if they are actually in use. And back to River Park. The city council's barrister, having been caught out once by failing to advertise the disposal, promised the judge the council was committed to following all necessary procedures in future. And the judge believed him. The decision was made with no opportunity for the Friends of River Park to ask or answer any questions. And that letter was written by Judith Martin of Romsey Road in Winchester.
Tracing War Dead. During the course of research prior to the publication of A Place of Transformation, The History of Sparsholt College, last October, it was discovered that six former students were killed in the Second World War. No memorial was ever installed, but the college has agreed that a plaque will be placed somewhere suitable in the college grounds. Regrettably, I have so far only been able to meet with the family of one of the six. I am very keen to trace descendants through the other five so that they too can, in due course, be invited to attend an unveiling of the plaque. The names and some information appear below, and I would very much welcome contact from readers of the Hampshire Chronicle who are family members or who have information that would help tracing them. The names are as follows. William Noel Abbott, born December 1918, Titchfield, Sergeant, Wireless Officer with RAF 217 Squadron, killed the 15th of February 1941. Joseph Frederick Alexander, born December 1921, Warrant Officer Pilot RAF 56 Squadron, killed the 15th of April 1945. Geoffrey Charles Layley, born November 1919, Pilot Officer, Observer, RAF Volunteer Reserve, killed 27th of January 1943. Henry Luscombe, born 1919, Captain with the Hampshire Regiment, killed the 20th of March 1944. It is known that Harry left a widow and a two-year-old daughter. And lastly, Richard Frank Salter, born April 1921, aircraftsman, first class, RAF 2, RAF 62 squadron, killed 18th of September 1944. That is Mr. John Lander of Gravel Lane, Barton, Stacey, who supplies his email address, j&plander@btinternet.com.
Andrew Adams writes about cuts to buses. The residents of Oliver's Battery are not alone in feeling isolated by a lack of bus services. We have completely lost sight of public transport to rural areas in recent years. Many of our sizeable villages have seen bus services reduced from a daily commuter service to a completely unusable two or three buses a week. Sizeable places like South Wanston and Sutton Scotney have a moderate service, which is unusable for many people as you can't get home after 7 p.m. or anywhere at all on Sunday. Springvale gets a bus every half an hour, but a few miles out to Mitchell Dever and the service is all but non-existent. We are told that the only choice is for the council to fund the trips that don't pay for themselves, which they can no longer afford. But surely there could be some innovation. The Springvale bus could extend to Mitchell Dever and East Stratton a few times a day, including an evening trip, for a small subsidy. The Badger Farm bus could likewise to serve Mr. Brammer and his fellow residents in Oliver's Battery. The City Council's Net Zero plan says that we must reduce car journeys across Winchester District. But unless there is a huge change in approach, It would be an uphill, brackets car, journey to get anywhere fast. And that one's from Andrew Adams, Harvest Court, Mitchell Devastation.
This next letter is from Roger Mallon, titled Welcome Guests. I hear that the government is to employ another 2,800 ambulances with the staff to man them, say another 3,000 people. Then there is the increase in border staff and civil servants to deal with the illegal immigrants invading our shores, and all this at a time of record low unemployment. Where are all these people supposed to come from, when much of industry is crying out for labour? After the war, we encouraged immigration from the Caribbean and the Indian subcontinent to fill the more basic vacancies. Unfortunately, these people were easily identified. They were marginalised and ill-treated by our indigenous population. But in time, they integrated and are now represented in all stratas of societies. What were we afraid of? With the advent of the EU and the collapse of the Eastern Bloc, its residents flocked here to work and did all sorts of work from agriculture to construction. Who has not heard of a Polish plumber? We also employed nurses from the East Indies and Africa. The list is endless, as we depended on immigrant workers to support our ageing population. Since Brexit, we have withdrawn into our shells regarding immigration and thrown up all sorts of barriers, which have spawned the growth of criminal gangs exploiting those looking for work. We need immigrants to supplement our labour market, so why not promote immigration ourselves in conjunction with our industries and open up more legal routes? Most only wish to earn money to support families back home and will not stay permanently. We will need them as our economy expands. What are we afraid of? And that was by Roger Mallon.
This isn't a letter, but it's the weekly... lovely photograph here of the Abbey Gardens Light Festival by Stu Martin. Bright lights won't pay the bills. Your council news has landed in my inbox. I read the good news that we've been allocated £1 million to the benefit of communities. Excellent, but not really very much. I read in the very next paragraph that the first beneficiary is to be an enchanted light garden in Abbey Gardens. Can someone please explain how this event will be a benefit, except maybe to the bus services, maybe the city car parks, maybe to the city centre pubs and bistros? Hardly much benefit to those whose incomes are too small to provide the essentials of life. Who will really need it? That's from Peter Innes, Nations Hill, Headborne Worthy.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write a good old style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we'll continue with editorial comment. Letter from Westminster, First Person and Belgarum. The editor heads up her article this week with "Water woes are hard to fathom." She writes, "To loosely quote Oscar Wilde, to lose one may be regarded as a misfortune. To lose two looks like carelessness. Thousands of households in the Winchester, Romsey and Southampton area lost their water supply once just before Christmas, and then many of the same were cut off again last week. It was both a salutary and also infuriating experience. The first outage was put down to a cold spell, and then a sudden thaw bursting scores of pipes. The most recent was blamed on some sort of mishap at Southern Water's Otterbourne base. On both occasions, customers were reminded not to take water for granted. But the accompanying emotion was fury that a company which makes millions of pounds in profit cannot guarantee something so basic and essential. Critics of the privatisation of the water supply some 30 years ago will point out that billions of pounds in profit have gone to company shareholders instead of being reinvested into the infrastructure. Anger at Southern Water's incompetence is so high that nationalisation of the water industry is back up for serious discussion. Oh. And now a letter from Westminster. The Winchester MP Steve Brine has a few words for us this week. Adele, you've got the letter from Westminster.
Yes, it'll be of no surprise that it's on the topic of water. He has written, "Water, water everywhere." Or not, as it turns out in recent days. Twice in 6 weeks, my constituents and residents in nearby Eastleigh and Southampton have faced a lengthy spell with no running water in their homes. The week leading up to Christmas, for thousands of households in Charnless Ford and across South Winchester, was bad enough, but you could just about be generous given the big freeze followed by the big four and tens of thousands of major leaks across the network. Last week's incident, at first glance, seems to be a totally different scenario, but the outcome was exactly the same. No water. So, on Tuesday, alongside MPs Caroline Noakes and Paul Holmes, I hauled the bosses of Southern Water to Westminster to explain themselves. They were left in no doubt how we, on behalf of you, feel about things and what we expect to happen next in terms of investment, compensation, and repairing any shred of confidence left in their company. CEO Lawrence Gosden admitted to us, Southern Water is not in a good state. And that found no argument from us. A speedy internal plus independent investigation is underway, and they've agreed that will be published in full. Furthermore, we will visit the Otterbourne site I visited myself earlier this month to see the major £800 million investment taking place to improve resilience when the next asset failure takes place during planned maintenance work. We simply cannot have a situation where 24,000 households and thousands of businesses are left for up to 5 days without water, because one accident, error, or malfunction takes the whole grid offline. Southern Water have also agreed to our demand that a more bespoke and flexible compensation scheme is in place, one that passes the reasonableness test is how I view it. All households impacted by the two outages will receive double compensation, upwards of £180. You don't need to do anything. It will be credited automatically to your water bill. And I will be driving for a case-by-case claims which are, understandably, being raised with me by pubs who lost days of trading in half-term or farmers who, again, face the loss of livestock or punishing veterinary bills. Domestic or business constituents who need my help with any of this shouldn't hesitate to get in touch. My casework team are here to help. Secondly, on a not unrelated subject, water quality and what we call combined storm overflows. I don't do fake news, and I never get in the gutter of negative partisan campaigning. But I do try to educate myself on the subject, because there is, rightly, great public concern around what happens when foul water overflows into our waterways. It's fiendishly complicated, and almost every country in the developed world is battling the fact storm, and foul water goes into the same system. But this government is turning things around, unlike any of its predecessors. through the Environment Act 2022. If any constituents are genuinely interested in the issue, I have a special webpage which explains how we got here and what we're doing to fix it at stevebryan.com/factorfake-waterquality. Finally, I've launched a brand new podcast, Prevention is the New Cure, discussing all things health and NHS with a political twist. I am joined by Dr. Helen Stokes Lampard, who is leading medical academic and a practice who is a leading academic a leading medical academic and a practicing GP.
Thank you. Now, in first person, Joanna Lewis writes about the total eclipse of the car. Paul, can we have it now, please?
Something very strange happened to me in Stockbridge last week. Ooh. I'd gone for a stroll, popped into the co-op, and then jumped back into the car, ready to drive off. So far, so normal. That was until I noticed that the passenger side was encased in a heavy darkness. For while I'd been gone, it appeared that a small house had been installed in the space next to me. I've since found out that it was probably one of the new Range Rovers, which were like the new BMW XM, Mercedes Maybach GLS, or on its way the GMC Hummer EV, are supersized. Weighing in around the 3-ton mark, they're wider and longer than any car we've seen on our roads before. Of course, it didn't help that I was driving my 2-seater convertible, I'm kindly referred to by the boyfriend as the go-kart. But any car would have found it impossible to reverse back out into the main road without serious risk of an accident due to zero visibility. I tried in vain to get the attention of the driver. A man of a certain age, he decided maybe then, maybe throughout his life, to be totally oblivious to his surroundings and to care little about any inconveniencing impact his lavish life choices were having on others. He kept his eyes fixed on his smartphone, not so much as a downwards glance, let alone the gentlemanly offer of guiding me out safely. I was left sitting in the dark shadow, wondering how long before mushrooms sprouted in my wheel arch or ferns grew up between the tyres. To make matters worse, whilst I was gesticulating in vain to get his attention, another super-sized SUV parked up on the other side. It was like a giant docking bay for whale pods, and I was the sprat caught in the middle. In the end, I decided against escalation and to calmly sit it out. I got out my newspaper, turned on the radio and ate my croissant, as if I had intended all along to spend Saturday morning in front of shop window full of exotic carpets, some half-dead shrubs and a refuse bin. I was just about to reread the deaths page when, hurrah, at last, the driver's wife returned from shopping, carrying a pint of milk and a carton of eggs. All that tonnage just to make an omelette. Bon appetit. One excuse for these massive vehicles is that car manufacturers want to entice wealthy big car owners to go electric. So they are making cars with bigger batteries. Therefore, the whole car has to be bigger. The result? Cars that are now too big for garages, parking spaces, and even roads. It's a farce. Finally, able to reverse out and leave, I then got stuck in traffic lights on Stockbridge Road as I dropped into Winchester. To my right was another dark, shadowy force, that black, sinister fencing concealing yet another oversized, not needed, mock Georgian housing development. It's been shoehorned in so close to a row of magnificent trees that any wildlife left will be killed off by light pollution and the loss of green space. This city council is showing a sudden late interest in planning rules after allowing developers to ruin Winchester through these kinds of development and intensify the climate emergency. It's allocated £3,000 and an external consultant to look into it. What a lame response. For at the same time, Bushfield Camp faces being turned over to developers when it is one of the richest sites of biodiversity left in the area and a designated site of importance for nature conservation. The vested interests in Winchester run deep. So it's vital to go further up the food chain and lobby the current landowners, the Church of England, no less. Let there be light at the end of this darkness.
Balgarham has come up with two little pieces this week from an alternative point of view. Tell us more, Nick.
Yes, the first one's called Snow Optical Illusion, and it's about a photograph, which I will just briefly explain. It's a photograph taken from the middle of the grassy area in the middle of the inner close of the cathedral, looking away from the cathedral. And it's a lovely winter's sunny day because the shadows from the trees at the end are stretching across the area. But the odd thing is that most of the grassy area is white, so they appear to have had a snowstorm of some sort. And that's the picture that this next little piece is about. At first glance, it looks as if the inner close has had a late winter covering of snow, as does occasionally happen at this time of year. But the city was not so lucky, or unfortunate, depending on your point of view. The white covering is the protection for the grass seed that has been sprinkled over the lawn by Winchester Cathedral ground staff. Without the sheeting, pests would have a daily feast, and the attractive lawn that matures over the summer would be pretty threadbare. The plump pigeons strutting across the material would likely get even more rotund. Balgarham is always amazed by how good the lawn looks every summer, and how sad it is that the Christmas market and the dozens of wooden chalets wreck it every year. The second piece is also about a photograph, which looks as though it's of a brick wall, with a splattering of seven whitish-greyish blobs and sprinkled between curly bits of white. And that's on a brick wall. Car Park's Artistic License, the title is called for this piece. The blobs, different colours and different sizes, the curving squiggle, the superb balance of composition, all set against a gritty urban backdrop of bricks and mortar. Neo-post-expressionist? Or is it neo-post-modernist art in Winchester city centre? Exuberant artistic expression is alive and well in Staple Gardens. It's a kind of abstract hen dog, or should that be Banksy? Oh, hold on. Where was the photo taken? Just off the high street? On a car park wall? So the blobs and squiggles are in fact the glue that once held a sign or three that warned that people parking without a permit would be clamped? Balgarham is disappointed. And in a city with so many talented art students.
Thank you.
Joanna Lewis.
Thank you. Now, let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. I've got various bits and pieces here. At the Theatre Royal, on March the 1st to March the 4th, there will be a new adaptation of Mike Leigh's classic Abigail's Party, a ruthless satire on Middle England envy and aspiration. If you seen that, that's an excellent play. Then the church to host string quartet performance. It's St Peter's Church in Stockbridge. The Morassi Quartet will be playing music on Friday, March the 3rd for the first concert of the year as part of Stockbridge Music's Young Musicians series. It's from 7:30 till 9:30 p.m. and tickets cost £20 for adults and £7.50 for under 18s. Now, I'm sure that all of our law-abiding listeners have never been to court, but if you want to experience the Winchester Crown Court, there's an open day to give people an insight into the criminal justice system. It's on Saturday the 18th of March, and it's people who attend will get a chance to experience a mock trial. Sounds very exciting. And a couple of other items. The Black Heart Orchestra, excuse me, two people playing 13 instruments between them, are officially the smallest orchestra in the world, and they're playing at the Ark in Winchester on Saturday the 11th of March. Tickets are available for that. And here's something different. In Southampton, on Sunday the 12th of March at 11 a.m, there is a seed swap, an annual seed swapping event, entry by donation, seeds available by donation, and that's at the performance the Art House Performance Venue and Social Centre, 178 Above Bar Street. I've never heard of one of those before. Now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 25th of February, the sun will set at 5:39 p.m. and on Wednesday the 1st of March, the sun will rise at 6:51 a.m. and will set at 5:46 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Paul, would you like to kick us off, please?
Apartments plan for Prime City Centre site. A former hair salon is set to be demolished with plans for two city centre townhouses. Aidan Murray, planning director of Gentian Developments, has applied for the demolition of 50 Colebrook Street in Winchester to make way for the new development. The shop frontage of the former Regis hair salon will be removed with parking included. The building will also be taller, in line with the former C&H building next door. This application is the latest from Gentian Developments, who own a number of buildings in the High Street and are in the process of buying the Brooks Shopping Centre. On the planning statement, it said, "Whilst located within the Winchester Conservation Area, the site in its current form is considered to detract from the historic environment and neither enhances nor preserves the character of the conservation area. It is considered that the proposed redevelopment of the site will improve both the character and appearance of the conservation area, which is considered to be a material consideration for the development. Whilst the site is located within the city centre, two parking bays have been included within the scheme, which would provide each dwelling with one dedicated off-road parking space. Former City Councillor Ian Tate submitted a comment in support. He said, "The existing building offers very little to the area, either as a commercial premise or in terms of its appearance. The proposal for the redevelopment of this site with two flats is to be commended. The location is wonderful in terms of being in the heart of the city, and the quality of the proposed accommodation is clear to see. I fully support this excellent planning application. However, the Environment Agency objects to the plan, as they say the flood risk assessment was insufficient. Otterley West, Sustainable Places advisor, said, "In the absence of an acceptable flood risk assessment, an FRA, we object to this application and recommend that planning permission is refused. The FRA does not adequately assess the flood risks posed by the development, which would restrict essential maintenance and emergency access to the water course."
Pancake race is flipping good fun. Crowds flocked to Winchester Cathedral for the annual Pancake Day race. Tuesday, February the 21st, marked Shrove Tuesday and the return of Winchester Rotary's popular pancake race in the cathedral's outer close. 26 teams, including local businesses, charities, schools and former mayors, competed for the prizes of fastest time and best attire. Competitors, with their frying pans at the ready, had to run a stretch of 38 metres and flip their pancakes three times, at the beginning, middle and end of their leg before handing over to their teammate. While the cathedral choristers from Pilgrim School grasped the fastest times, it was business management consultant Lane Clark and Peacock LLP who won Best Dressed, with their four representatives dressing as an inflatable Father Christmas, the Easter Bunny, an elf and the Tooth Fairy. Other outfits included breakfast items, minions, bells, chickens, scousers and boiler suits, while some teams opted to wear their uniforms. Businesses paid £50 to enter a team of four, while charities, schools and public services paid £25. Proceeds from the event will go towards the Hope Street Project and Trinity Winchester's Women's Services. Winchester Rotary President Deborah said, "It's a great event in Winchester, which is becoming increasingly popular. It brings a community together and it's all in aid of charities preventing domestic abuse." Dean Catherine Ogle kicked off the festivities by giving thanks to all the participants, spectators and organisers involved before going into the background of Shrove Tuesday. She said, "Shrove Tuesday is the day before Lent starts. It's a day of feasting and festival. In some places it's called Mardi Gras, which means Fat Tuesday." Former Mayor Dominic Hiscock, part of the Old Mayor's team who wore their Merrill robes, said, "I am delighted to be here today and glad it's not raining. There's a great atmosphere and lots going on."
Refugees still hope to return. Friday, February 24th, marks a year since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, marking the exodus of more than 8 million refugees. According to Operational Data Portal, on February 7th, about 1,601 and 400 Ukrainian refugees were recorded in the UK and Hampshire. The number of new arrivals has been on the rise. Olga, 38, and Maisha, 9 months old, came to Hampshire for the Ukraine sponsorship scheme. Before February 24th, 2022, Olga had a normal life in Kyiv, working as a lawyer. She was 8 months pregnant when Russia invaded. She and her husband made the hard decision to leave the country for the sake of their baby. They walked from Kyiv to Moldova's border, sleeping in shelters and facing the cold winter. Once in Moldova, her journey had to be continued alone, as the Ukrainian government set a law that men aged 18 to 70 were, and still are, not allowed to leave the country. She arrived at Heathrow on April 21st, leaving everything behind, but looking forward to the arrival of her baby. Olga said, "I'm very happy with my host family. They are lovely, 60-year-old couple. They are always willing to help me and Maisha. I was very lucky to have them." She doesn't speak very fluent English, but she has been supported by another Kyiv refugee, Tetiana, who has been helping her compatriots deal with official agencies thanks to her command of English. Tetiana, who came here in May, has a son, who is 7 years old. She previously worked as a business manager and photographer. Talking about how she was shocked by the Russian invasion, she said, "We had some who were very pro-Soviet Union in the country and we could cope with that. They were crazy, but we could manage." Days before the invasion, she started donating blood, fearing that it would be needed. When everything started, my blood saved soldiers' lives. I felt useful. I wasn't a doctor or a nurse, but somehow I was helping my country. And that's why we want to return. I'm not an immigrant. I'm a temporarily displaced person. We have to adapt to a new culture, food, language, school, and it is hard. England is beautiful and people are friendly, but I love my country and that is where we belong.
Inspirational amputee on mission to Ukraine. An inspirational Hampshire man is travelling to Ukraine with a team of doctors to help support amputees. Alex Lewis, who lost his limbs and needed facial reconstruction after he contracted strep A and septicemia more than 10 years ago, will travel to Ukraine to help support amputees in that country. The six-day expedition will see the team travel around Ukraine, completing workshops in and around amputee rehabilitation clinics on emerging technology which the team is bringing with them. Alex from Stockbridge explained the workshop, saying, "Post-op, we'll be able to give an amputee an arm within 24 hours and they'll be able to use it to understand what it feels like to hold a fork without your fingers and your hand, what it feels like to hold a pen with your without your hand, just getting them used to a prosthetic." He continued, "So we're taking this emergent technology over to Ukraine because we believe it's not just about supplying equipment. There needs to be a greater understanding of where are they going after their rehab journey. Are they going home? Are they going back to fight? Are we equipping them to go back to the front line? What was their job beforehand? When the war is over, what does their amputee life look like when whatever happens in the future, when the war dissipates? These guys will go back to their previous lives, or hopefully to as near as their previous lives as possible. So we need to understand what they want to achieve with their prosthetic. So we'll run the workshop in and around that kind of support. The expedition will enter Ukraine from Poland, travelling to Lviv and then Kyiv. Alex said that he's excited about the expedition because I know what we've developed, the group that's going. I know we can make a difference, and I know that some of the technologies we are offering would never have seen them before. So we are taking something really new and innovative, but more importantly, it's robust and affordable. And right now, that's what they want. Following the expedition, work will take place in offering more mobile solutions for amputees, allowing them to have the work they need done in their homes. Alex is also hoping to do follow-up expeditions to Ukraine.
Police to put hundreds more bobbies on the beat. The local police bobby could make a return following an announcement by Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner. This is as a result of the recruitment of 600 police officers to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Force by April 2024. The news comes after Hampshire's Constabulary's police staff was cut by nearly a quarter in 2021. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones said, "Today I'm announcing the return of the local policing bobby. Much like the old village bobbies, town policemen and those police officers that were dedicated and named across cities and communities in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Over the last 20 months, the public have told me that they want to feel safer in their communities. They want to see police officers more, but they also want to know their police officer, what their name is and how to get hold of them. As Police and Crime Commissioner, I pledge 600 more police officers and I'm pleased that we have now recruited all of them. 2 weeks ago, I announced an additional 50 police officers as part of my budget, so by this time next year, we will have 650 more police officers and a named, known individual to everyone in their local communities." In a statement on the Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner's website, Donna Jones added, "I have spent the last 18 months as your police commissioner listening, learning, and talking to thousands of people. I was convinced very quickly that bringing back local named police officers to serve you and your communities was the right thing to do. Since then, I've been working on finding the money to pay for more police officers and been successful in doing that. 600 extra police officers have already been recruited, 100 more than our national target. Now is the time to again make clear I am committed to giving the public what they want and need, a stronger relationship with their local police force, and to feel safe in their communities. The Police Commissioner has worked on these plans in tandem with incoming Chief Constable Scott Chilton, who took up his role on Thursday, February the 23rd. And there is a photo attached to this piece showing Acting Chief Constable Ben Snuggs with Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones, and both of them with a smile on their face.
I've got another photo here, but this one is from the cathedral's cameras, and it shows the return of a peregrine to near the roof. The article reads, Falcon setting up cathedral home for chicks. Winchester Cathedral's peregrine cameras have been switched on for the new year. Last week, the cathedral's verger, Ian James, confirmed that the nest had been cleaned and the female, Winnie, had been spotted. This time last year, Winnie was lamenting the loss of her partner, Chester. But then a new partner emerged, William. Winnie had two chicks last year, named Elizabeth and George, who flew the nest in August. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, has been monitoring the peregrines over the last few years. Mr. Betton, aged 62, said, Winnie has been guarding the area to make sure no other peregrines take her patch. There's been no sign of William yet, but hopefully we'll see him soon. Winnie will lay her eggs between March 10th and 20th. She will lay about 4 eggs and incubate them for 1 month. 6 weeks after they hatch, they will start to stretch their wings. Then, by the end of June, they'll be flying around and will stay in the area until the end of summer.
Leisure Centre in shambles. A city council has claimed shambolic conditions at Winchester's new leisure centre and that it is down to staff shortages. Sue Cook claimed Winchester's Sport and Leisure Centre, which cost £43 million to build, has a range of issues which are not acceptable. The Colden Common and Twyford ward councillor, who uses the facility run by everyone active to swim, made a list of complaints following her visit on Sunday, the 12th of February. These included rubbish in the car park, a lack of operational hair dryers, out-of-order disabled shower, clumps of hair in the shower, no toilet paper, a cold pool, talcum powder and other matter left on the floor, and only one person behind the desk at peak time. Councillor Cook said, I'm disgusted. The place looked shambolic on Sunday. That is not what I pay my money for. People need to know it's not acceptable. It comes down to a lack of staff. If you've got staffing issues, you've got to get stuck in. We don't want it to become like River Park. The leisure centre is the jewel of the Nile, and that needs maintaining. Area contract manager at the leisure centre in Bar End, Alison Lewis, said, we would like to reassure customers that we take the quality and cleanliness of our leisure centre very seriously. We're aware of recent concerns raised and are currently rectifying these issues. This includes recruiting a new cleaning team, ensuring strict cleaning regimes are in place, and prioritising repairs within the changing room facilities. With regard to the swimming pool water temperature, we can confirm that it has not been adjusted. It is currently set between 29 and 29.5 degrees, which follows guidance issued by the Pool Water Treatment Advisory Group. The health and well-being of the local community is our top priority. We will continue to work hard to offer customers a welcoming environment for everyone to enjoy. In recent months, other members have taken to the Facebook group Winchester Rants to express their concerns. Lee Bryan commented, "It has great facilities but really could do with a clean." An anonymous member posted, "We built a new leisure centre. It has 25 metres of extra pool, but no all-weather pitches or additional facilities. We have to drive outside of Winchester to play matches at an awesome facility at Ganga Farm near Rumsey. Why can't Winchester build one of these?" Councillor Cook's recent move to become an independent councillor means she can no longer sit on the Winchester Sport and Leisure Park Advisory Board. A councillor who has been raising questions over staffing for the past year said that others share her feelings and haven't had their complaints addressed.
Search is on for pet polecat. A Stanmore woman is appealing for help after the disappearance of her polecat. Tiff Jones, 42, said that her domesticated polecat, Stewie, went missing the evening of Friday, February the 3rd, from her home at Addison Close. She says Stewie was last seen near Winchester Prison on Saturday, February the 11th, but she has not received reports of sightings since. Tiff, who runs ferret group Winchester Ferrets UK, said, "He's so friendly, he's so domestic. You're more likely to be bitten by a child than you are by him." Tiff said that her youngest son, Toby, 10, is very upset over Stewie's disappearance, saying, "It's devastating. He's broken-hearted. It was his best friend." Anyone who has news about Stewie is asked to contact Tiff on 07988 768 699. That's 07988 768 699. And of course there's two pictures attached to this. One showing the delightful Stewie sat on a nice little rug, and another one curled up and fast asleep in Tiff's arms.
Bridal boutique dream comes true. A bridal boutique, which started as a dream for two friends, has finally become a reality after its opening in Alresford. House of Bemia opened its doors at the Old Chapel in the Dean to fellow businesses and the Deputy Mayor of Winchester with its Valentine's Day launch. Friends and co-business owners Bethany Sharp from Fair Oak and Lauren Fletcher from Kingsworthy are stocking 19 dresses, six of which have been made by local dressmaker Liz Vanstone. Bethany, 24, said, "We're very much focused on the more free-spirited, bohemian and non-traditional bride. We wanted to create refreshing, minimalistic looks for our customers." Ahead of the launch, the new business received its first bookings, with the soonest available slot being taken up. Lauren, 31, said, "It's really exciting, but very scary. It's like a dream, and now it's actually happening. To get that first booking was like, oh my gosh, people actually believe in us." The result is better than we had envisaged. For a chapel to become available when we were looking for a place to open was ideal. Everything sort of fell at our feet. Deputy Mayor, Councillor Angela Clear, attended in place of the Mayor, Councillor Derek Green, and raised a glass to the business start-up owners before cutting the ribbon. Councillor Clear said, "It was a delight to be here and help open this lovely boutique. I know it's Bethany and Lauren's dream, and I hope it goes from strength to strength." Other local businesses were also pleased to be invited. Vicky Oven of New Era Travel was imagining her customers, with many turning to the travel agents for weddings abroad or honeymoons, in the dresses on display. Miss Oven said, "I feel delighted that we were included. It's such a lovely event in a beautiful building. It's vital that small independent businesses work together, particularly here in Alresford. I would definitely be recommending the House of Bemia to my customers." Bethany and Lauren met as former bridal boutique employees and have had the dream to set up their own ambition ever since. The pair got more of a taste for working together in the bridal world when Lauren was Bethany's maid of honour. House of Bemia is open for appointments at the Old Chapel in the Dean, 10 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. from Tuesday to Friday, and 9 a.m. till 6:30 p.m. on Saturdays, and some Sundays from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. For more information, head to houseofbemia.co.uk.
Free hairdos for heroes. A hairdresser's in Winchester has been proving it is a cut above with its community work by offering a free haircut to deserving community heroes. Harrington's Hairdressing has begun offering a free service to selected people who receive nominations from the public. The Harrington Helps concept offers individuals and groups within their communities the chance to come and experience Harrington's cut and finish service free of charge to raise the spirits of those who need it. Through the initiative, many carers, charity workers and volunteers have already been given the confidence boost of a good-looking haircut. Each week, the receptionists will share the available appointments and book them on a first-come, first-served basis, with its Winchester site located at 16 The Square. A spokesman said, "Whether it is a thank you to the leader of a community group doing vital work, some recognition of a volunteer that's gone the extra mile, a little pick-me-up haircut for someone who has lost their job, or a confidence boost for those who have come out of the other side of chemotherapy, we're there."
New Italian restaurant opens doors. A new Italian restaurant has opened its doors on Bridge Street, offering a classic Italian restaurant experience for customers. As previously reported, the restaurant is located in a lot on Bridge Street, which had previously been the site of Asian eatery Noodle Bar, which closed its doors in 2022 due to the cost of living crisis. The new restaurant, La Gastronomia, had its soft opening on Monday, February the 13th, and is owned by Winchester resident Sergio Mitrano. The deli restaurant offers both meals and Sicilian produce for customers, with all of the food made fresh each day. While the restaurant contains minimal seating, Sergio has plans to expand the restaurant into an upstairs space above the deli, with seating for around 18 to 20 people to sit and enjoy their meals, as well as planning to sell and serve Sicilian wine as soon as a license can be acquired for the restaurant. The restaurant will also offer masterclass lessons so customers can learn how to make Italian food themselves. Sergio explained, "We can do this if they want a simple lesson, or something in the kitchen, we can do a masterclass." Sergio said he wants his restaurant to serve Italian food. He continued, "The food is in a traditional, very old style. That is what I try to cook. I've already seen some Italians. They came in here yesterday. They've been living here for 4 or 5 years. And they say, finally, it's good to see Italian, true Italian food." La Gastronomia is open from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Saturday.
Thousands join in Run in the Sun. The number of runners taking part in this year's Winchester 10K may have been double the total for last year. Entrants came from all across the country to take part in last Sunday's race. At last year's event, nearly 1,000 took part. This time round, organisers were confident that the total could reach 2,000. The runners started the course in bright sunshine outside Winchester Guildhall in the Broadway before completing the race by River Park Leisure Centre. There was a mixture of serious competitors and leisure runners, some taking part for the very first time. Finishing first was 40-year-old Andy Greenleaf, who completed a course in 32 minutes and beat last year's winner, George King. Andy, from Winchester and District Athletics Club, said it was great to come first, adding, "There was great support on the route and it was a really good race with George. It is my first race for Winchester since 2012, so it is fantastic to be back." And we also have another image from Stuart Martin here, just showing the runners running alongside the Guildhall.
Litterpick Invite. A local community group are running a litterpicking event. The Winnell Forum is a group that is focused on making a difference in the local area. They are holding the Big Winnell clean-up on Saturday, March the 25th. Organisers are aiming for 50 people to attend and help keep Winnell a clean place to live in and visit. In a social media post, the group said, "Spring is just around the corner, and as part of the Great British Spring Clean, you can join the Big Winnell clean-up. Taking place on Saturday the 25th March from 10 a.m. to 12 noon at Winnell Manor Park. Please join the team by signing up on our website, and I hope that they do some recycling of recyclables at the same time, as do Winchester litter pickers."
Streets busk for earthquake victims. A Winchester music group has taken to the high street to raise money for the earthquake in Syria and Turkey. The Winchester Yuki Jam is a collective of musicians that meet monthly to perform various songs. People of all musical abilities are invited to join in. In their most recent outing, they were on Winchester High Street as part of a fundraising event for the Turkish-Syrian earthquake. Crowds gathered to see the group perform tunes on a number of different string instruments, with many passers-by generously donating to their cause. Founder of the Winchester Yuki Jam, Andy Martin, said, "The busk was a great success. We played for 3 hours and collected £1,904, which is amazing. The generosity of people knows no bounds." Winchester Yuki Jam previously raised over £3,700 for the Ukraine crisis appeal in March last year. The group is aiming to donate even more this time round. And there's a picture of them stood outside. I can't work out which the shop is actually, but all smiling. There must be at least 20 of them, I should think, probably, with their musical instruments hanging around their necks.
Grandfather 79 makes his music video debut. A grandfather from Swanmore has recorded and released his first ever single, Free, at the age of 79. Ted Quincy wrote and recorded the song Robin on a starch pack on a whim with zero songwriting experience, saying that the idea simply came to him one night. Ted explained, "I occasionally wake up in the middle of the night and I start thinking of a song. I go into notes and I write a couple of lines and then I've written a verse." After not knowing what to do with the song for a few weeks, Ted eventually decided to record it and release it alongside an accompanying music video. Alongside releasing the song on YouTube, the grandfather of five also set up a fundraising page so listeners who enjoyed Robin on the starch pack could donate some money to charity. Ted decided on the cancer charity Prevent Breast Cancer, as he had lost both his wife and one of his daughters to the disease. Ted said, "It gradually occurred to me that it could be used to raise money for charity, and it must be for a cancer charity. And secondly, it must research into genes. Prevent Breast Cancer, do gene research, and that looked to be the one." Ted is hoping to raise £1,000 for Prevent Breast Cancer, and at the time of writing has managed to collect £850 since the page was launched on February 14th, a total that he said he was enormously pleased with. To find out more about Ted's fundraiser or to donate, visit justgiving.com/fundraising/Edwin-Quincy. The music video can also be found on YouTube.
Shoppers get caught up in mock duel drama. And there appear here three photographs, somebody holding a pistol, firing it in the direction of the target, who's another person, opposite him with their own pistol. One of the adversaries discharges his pistol, and there are various people looking on, including two young boys who are looking really quite fascinated and gleeful at the excitement of it. A living history group surprised shoppers in Winchester with a duel based on practice from the late 18th and early 19th centuries. Foreign Field Living History Group reenacted the gentleman's pistol duel in Winchester Square, attracting crowds during the February half-term break. The actors took on the life of honour and crime in the Georgian and Regency period with a polite exchange of bullets using duelling pistols while dressed in traditional waistcoats. Duels, although illegal, were planned between two gentlemen in the late 18th and early 19th century as a fight for honour to settle affairs. This style of combat was considered more gentlemanly than a fist fight, which was associated with the lower classes. The historical interpreters seen in the square portray various people and acts throughout the history, from medieval times to the Cold War.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have time for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and place the correct address label on the front of the wallet and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, especially to our copiers and our editors. And of course, many thanks to our reading team this week, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Adele Bouchard.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.